on Tuesday, I got up. I just had energy. I actually had just kind of gotten over my neck hurting. I had pulled a muscle in my neck several days ago. And I had gotten over that. I woke up thinking, that doesn't hurt. And I thought, wow, I am going to be so productive today. So I took our oldest to school. That's the first thing you do in the morning as a parent. And I took our youngest over to Walmart. Now, in our apartment, there are two toilets. We're lucky enough to have two bathrooms now. Both of the toilet seats were horseshit. They were garbage.
Shit. You know exactly what we're talking about when you say the toilet seat's horseshit. If you sit on it, it goes like, and yeah, it goes to one side. Just
like rinky-dink little crappy toilet seats, because it's not like we're living in the lap of luxury in this apartment. And also, we've been recently having an issue with the youngest attempting to leave the house.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't as much of a problem because she wasn't great with the lock and she used to be like a little too short to undo the lock. And then she figured out how to do the lock. And so over the past couple of weeks, she'll just walk straight out the front door.
And laugh. So anyway, I take her to Walmart. I pick up two wooden toilet seats, which are nice and heavy, meaty-ass toilet seats. And aside from the toilet seats, we also get childproof doorknobs. Now, what that is a little device you place on top of the doorknob that only the adult knows how to turn. So I installed these things. First thing that happens is Gooby just having an absolute meltdown over being stuck inside the house. We're up here.
I went outside!
I want door! Then ACD got up, used the toilet, experienced a real toilet seat.
Don't talk about my poopies.
Oh, no. It has nothing to do with your poopies and everything to do with your weight.
Oh my God.
So since ACD has been in recovery, ACD has been steadily losing weight.
Which I did not think would happen.
It's gone down a little more than it should.
I'm in the healthy range.
You're in the healthy range, but we don't want you to come out of the healthy
Peter's
range.
Peter's treating me like a cat.
We had a conversation about ACD's eating habits, and we had a breakthrough.
And Peter keeps phrasing it this way.
We had a breakthrough.
We didn't have a breakthrough.
We had a breakthrough.
We didn't have a breakthrough.
We did.
I have a concentration in my doctoral studies in health psychology. And I fucking know a lot about weight and a lot about nutrition and how it works and about behavioral health and how alcohol impacts that, whatever. And so I know why. I have always known why this is happening.
Which is why it's strange that you didn't act on it.
No. And Peter keeps saying that we had a breakthrough.
No, it's not so much that you learned what it is, but that you also have to apply it to yourself.
I hate that.
We're going to get you back up to a healthy weight and release you back to nature.
I am a healthy weight.
I know. But we don't want you falling out of that. So we fixed ACD. And then I went out to get the 7-year-old, went over to the post office to pick up our mail because we still don't have a damn key for the stupid mailbox outside the apartment.
Sign number 2 or 3, that shit was going to happen.
Heading back home, I get rear-ended hard. And when I say I got rear-ended, that is a vast understatement as to what happened. This was like a human centipede situation.
It was, yeah.
So there were 4 cars involved in this rear ending. The first car was a sports car, which was in front of me. I was the second car. The third car behind me was an older vehicle. I'm not really sure of what make. And behind that person, same thing, kind of an older car. But they were driving very fast. And slammed so hard into the person behind me that they slammed into me. And I didn't necessarily slam into the person in front of me, but I gave him a little tappy. So anyway, myself, 7-year-old bub in the car, we get thrown forward And guess what happened to my neck? My neck began to suck again from that point. It still does right now. It's not so bad. But the person behind me who got it the worst gets out and begins engaging in what I can only describe as wild yelling at the person who instigated the crash. Really loud, angry yelling. It included phrases like, why did you do that? Why were you going so fast? You were going so fast. Why? As if there was definitely a reason for that. Like, I'm sure like the person who ran into her was going to explain to her motivation for that speed. And then another one was, I'm taking pictures. I'm going to get you. So anyway, I go out, I check on everybody, I make sure everybody's okay, because I assumed that this was an accident and not on purpose. If I had assumed it was on purpose, I probably would have handled it a little differently, but I got out and I was nice and jovial, kind, empathetic.
Jovial. Imagine Peter jovial.
Yeah, I was just like, oh... Hey, are you okay? The
Peter in the world is like a very, well, still cynical, but like does not come off that way to strangers.
No, I'm a very nice person.
Very.
I'm a warm individual.
Big old teddy bear.
I'm a warm individual who cares a lot about people, despite what they tell you.
And they're just a Michigander.
Well, so much so that the woman who was yelling, I'm going to get you, like leaned on me to get a hug. Like,
what the fuck?
I was comforting this lady who was very upset. So I came home. My neck hurt. I'm tired. I'm beaten up a little bit. Luckily, my car's not really that banged up. And I'm just like so happy to be home, just sitting down with everybody, gonna have my spaghetti. I put my spaghetti in the bowl and I immediately drop it on the floor, bursting everywhere. Spaghetti sauce, spaghetti noodles, ceramic.
A ceramic bowl. So obviously Gooby runs in and goes.
Yeah, just like, ah, I'm barefoot.
So that was my job during this situation.
Yeah, you were keeping Gooby away while I was picking up all the broken spaghetti plate. I put the bowl into the garbage can, and as I'm doing that, I fucking cut my goddamn finger. Got a nice big slice right there.
Don't say that. That scares me.
I am at this point in the evening beaten up pretty good.
By the day.
It sucked. Like, that was a garbage day. Yeah. I thought it was going to be great. And then it just turned out to be me taking L after L.
L after L.
Tighten your buttholes. It's time for PACT. I've now gotten into a groove where I forget you're going to do that. I don't know why. I'm the P, Peter Coffin. The lovely Ms. Astronaut Cowboy Doctor is right here. That's the ACD, in case you're wondering. Together, we're PACT. Don't miss an episode. Like, comment, subscribe, and leave us a glowing review on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever weird thing you use to listen to podcasts. We are a 5-star podcast. See?
I'm a 5-star man!
Join our Discord. We hang out there all the time, as well as some other fun stuff. By becoming a patron, you can join us on our movie nights and our upcoming theory reading group, which are starting later in the month. So help us keep the lights on by becoming a patron at patreon.com/pactpod. That's PACDPOD. Your monthly support gets you access to members only areas on our Discord, gets you exclusive content, and you see some content before everyone else. Finally, please tell your friends we rely so big on word of mouth. We stream 7 p.m. Eastern every Saturday. Thank you so much for tuning in.
It all starts with academic Twitter. That's how I found this, even though I don't use my academic Twitter account at all. But I still get emails, and I want to just cancel it completely. But I get an email notification about something that one of my colleagues tweeted, and they quote tweeted this thing with disgust. It is a picture of a woman texting her friend. The text says, "We have COVID. Shh. That's why we're coming home a day early." Basically, like saying, "Hey, we have COVID. We're on the plane. Don't tell." And it, someone taking this picture over her shoulder, and they posted it saying, "Ever wonder why we are where we are in this pandemic? People like this is why." And so this got the wheels turning for Peter and myself, because this woman and the however other many women are like her are not the reason.
No, they're
why we're in this pandemic. Mm-mm. In fact, even if you want to say that their agency in spreading the disease is the reason for the pandemic as individuals, the ideology that underpins them saying, "Oh, we have COVID, we can't tell anybody," or the reason that they have COVID is not because they are innately bad or themselves. There is a super structural process that has been constructed around COVID that has rendered it a moral issue. That's the main center of today. We have individualized and moralized the response to COVID rather than accounting or holding accountable the government. The reason I say government is because it is ostensibly the thing that is supposed to represent and protect the safety of its people according to itself. We as Marxists obviously know that the bourgeois imperial state of the United States doesn't do that. But
that's what most people believe.
That's what most people believe.
Or at least believe it's supposed to.
And that's why these fucking academic liberals think that people like this is why we're in a pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
When people like this are why we're in the pandemic.
Six former administration officials last week wrote that open letter urging the administration to change course, to change strategy. Is it time?
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day. Every day it is time for us to agree that there are things and tools that are available to us to slow this thing down.
Yeah. These are the representative of the bourgeois state of the United States of America who are leading the response to COVID.
Yeah.
This is our COVID response.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day.
That's what the vice president of the United States of America said in response to how is it time to change our response to this persisting global pandemic.
That's who we're not supposed to think is responsible. They've seeded ideology to make us not think about how these people who can't string together a coherent sentence are in fact in charge of the primary governing apparatus, the state's response.
Instead of this blonde bitch on the plane.
Yeah.
And her family.
So we have other people who are saying things like, well, you know, this is somebody on Twitter by the name of Joseph Allen. Says, I think a lot of our current problems stem from the fact we moved away from the very simple message that vaccines work. And what he does, he cites this thing from the Harvard Gazette, which I don't think every normal person is out there reading the fucking Harvard Gazette. I don't think that's where they're getting their COVID information from. So I don't think that this quote is really that relevant to the everyday person's life, but whatever. It's a complex quote basically saying that vaccines work. It loads it up with words because it's the Harvard Gazette, and that's what people do in academic literature. I mean, sure, go ahead, critique the academic literature for being too wordy. That's fine. You can do that. It's not where our current problems stem from. And vaccines aren't like the full solution either, just to be clear.
Right.
Like, this is from our Discord user, Quendergier. By the way, join our Discord, link in the show notes. Quendergier said, vaccines are good, masks are good, and masks and vaccines can certainly be part of a paradigm that helps, but it's like, and this is the metaphor that Quendergier came up with, it's like those things are the nails that are holding together the house. You can't build a house entirely out of nails.
That's good shit, Quinder.
And it's the truth. Like, do I think that vaccines are good? Yes. Do I think that, as we're going to talk about with a little bit of vaccine hesitancy and stuff like that, do I think there's reasons that people are suspect of it? Also, yes. Do I think that they are in of themselves, along with wearing masks, a solution to COVID? Clearly not.
Right.
Most people in the country have worn masks. We're up to like 70% of people have had at least one vaccine at this point in our country. So it's...
The other thing I want to differentiate too is like the personal responsibility narrative. It's the same such that we're offloading responsibility onto individuals where individual action does not resolve a systemic problem. Not systemic meaning widespread, but one that's baked into our healthcare system in this context.
Absolutely.
It's the same as consumer activism in that way. However, the difference is that there is some element of personal responsibility that is at least a little bit more materially valid because a vaccine, wearing a mask, what have you. It at least helps you, and it is also a contagious disease. So like the way that we interact with people in terms of disease, like your individual actions, like at a very small microcosm, do matter. So that's why in this situation, the vaccines, the mask, whatever, that's why they're considered nails to the house and not completely useless.
Well, it's not exactly consumption either. It doesn't track completely with that paradigm.
That's why I want to differentiate from that, because I don't want to conflate personal responsibility in a pandemic and infectious disease spread with buying or eating vegan, which does
shit.
Nothing.
Yeah. Fuck all. Absolutely jack shit.
That nail house metaphor applies specifically to this individual action as pertinent to healthcare in the context of infectious disease.
I think that is a great distinction. The next thing that we have to talk about, people notice that wearing masks and getting vaccines hasn't stopped COVID.
Yeah.
People see the fact that, you know, again, 70% of people in the country have been vaccinated with at least one dose. People see everyone out in masks, and yet we are now in Omicron. And in terms of sheer numbers of infected people, we are at the worst right now.
And people who are vaccinated getting COVID. And maybe not getting COVID, but maybe having these sometimes side effects, but sometimes adverse events happen to them related to the vaccine.
So people say things like, well, the vaccine is fake. The vaccine is not doing anything. Look at the big pharma making all this money off of the vaccine.
One of the things that we looked at was the president. Is it president? Yeah. Of the American Medical Association, who's kind of explaining why he thinks that there's been a lot of unnecessary confusion that's been generated around the COVID response, not to the fault of individuals who are subject to this in the world, but because of the messaging that the CDC maybe could have played a stronger role in clarifying.
There have been conflicting reports as to what a mask does, for instance, conflicting reports as to efficacy of certain things. Et cetera, et cetera. The CDC has not been entirely consistent in terms of information throughout this pandemic. It's just that is the truth. And that confuses people. It makes things difficult.
Well, I love what Dr. Gerald Herman says from the American Medical Association. He says, well, again, this is science. This is not mathematics. So the numbers may change. We're learning, all of us, the CDC, all my scientific colleagues, myself on the front lines, we're learning. So the messaging may change at times, but it's not any deliberate format to confuse people or because we don't know what we're doing or the CDC doesn't. Science changes. It's a changing discipline.
Which is a dialectical view, to be clear. Like, it's in flux.
Well, that's because dialectical materialism is a descriptor that is accurate for how the world works.
Yes.
He doesn't acknowledge this explicitly, but he does indicate that the general public does not see what's happening with COVID in that way.
Yeah.
Whether it is the liberal academic whose discipline is not in virology or epidemiology or public health or anything related to COVID-19 specific, and they're fixated on this one thing that the CDC said at this one particular given time, saying, oh, we have to wear 500 masks and we need to get 7 jabs every year and like whatever, because of this one thing at one incident at one particular time. And that's how it's always going to be. And because the pandemic was at this deadly, highly contagious, highly deadly level at this point, it's always going to be, and this is going to be our lives, and we're going to live in the plague for the rest of human history. They're not open to new data, and neither are the typical COVID misinformation agents that you think of when they are listening to the CDC and thinking that they said masks work and now they're saying they don't. So I guess the CDC is full of shit. And oh, they say vaccines work, but these people got COVID and got side effects, because like in a scientific discipline and epidemiology and virology and vaccines and medicine, you don't have 100% efficacy in a treatment that's given. You don't have that for anything.
What this type of viewpoint is referring to is what Engels calls a metaphysical viewpoint, a point of view where these things are seen in death, in stasis, in a specific point in time where they've been studied, been recorded, and officially acknowledged. That is a metaphysical view of things. And to be clear, the end of history, the Fukuyama idea, which he's since gone back on, by the way, to his credit, but this idea has really perpetuated where pretty much everything that happens is how it's always going to be.
On all sides of the ideological COVID conflict.
The culture war around it.
Yeah, and the current social political zeitgeist. All of those things are looking at COVID in a metaphysical way, wherein a data point is static and unchanging. That is the way that essentially COVID exists.
Now, that being said, this is the state. It does exist to uphold the class contradictions of our society. And this is not to say that skepticism is unwarranted or a bad thing. Not blind skepticism, though. We'll continue.
In my own research, I study a lot on medical distrust and research and intervention participation. And there's this stereotype of people who are anti-vax, anti-science, really right-wing conservative Karens who don't want to get the vaccine because it's taking away their freedom, But that the majority of people who are vaccine hesitant tend to be people originating from historically and or currently medically underserved groups, especially among Black Americans who have been direct subjects to the medical abuse for the past several decades, as recent as the 1970s, when the Tuskegee study ended. It started either in the 30s or 40s, but it was decades of intentional being infected with syphilis to watch, to develop a treatment for it, to see how it developed. And especially with that kind of like injective procedure of treatment, like that you could understand pretty easily why somebody with that history, or with people even in their families who have experienced that type of medical abuse.
Or just have heard that that's what happens to Black people. Or have
heard that that's what happens to Black people in the United States medical and scientific community. You would understand why you wouldn't want to get a jab. That you also see is supported by huge industries that you can now see is now being connected, not the vaccine itself, but now COVID is being researched and its connections with cannabis and how cannabis might be an effective treatment for it.
Meaning Pfizer invested like $6 billion in the medical cannabis industry, and suddenly studies start coming out saying that medical cannabis can help treat COVID.
And you have your fucking relatives locked up for minor possession charges. It is very clear why people who are aware of these historical experiences wouldn't want to put their faith in the United States medical system.
Yeah.
But that syphilis study is just like one really like seminal case of medical abuse of like Black and brown people in the US, and especially Black brown men. But like there's a chronic history of that and only that, like up to recent history of just abusing people of color as medical subjects.
And then there's also the communities not having the infrastructure other communities have due to historical disparities.
Sure. So like your healthcare is shitty still because of those baked in systemic disparities and how they manifest in a racialized manner in the US today. But there are other just direct instances of people being sterilized without knowing about it, especially Black women and Black men. Eugenics movements that are disguised as like feminist things.
But even if you zoom out from that and go to the general public, it's understandable why some people see this huge for-profit health system, which medicines are pushed, and they are pushed by companies to people who don't need them. There are people that need them, but they're pushed to people who don't need them. You can see that in the opioid epidemic, right, for instance, which, again, so many people are affected by. There are so many people across racial lines who see the effects of that. And you see these patented medicines making these pharmaceutical companies making shitloads of money. And you're just thinking like, well, they have a reason for me doing this other than my health.
Or they don't have a reason to do this for my health.
Yes, that may be the case. And that's a powerful instigator of skepticism. Sure. Because we all understand that somebody's out there to screw us. That's how the world works. Now, keep in mind, it doesn't have to. It just does that way because of our economic base. And so this is kind of what leads us to the conspiracy theories. Mm-hmm. What happens is you have people without a material basis for their criticism become skeptical for legitimate reasons, and they just lose their damn minds trying to figure out what's going on.
Right. So there's this conflation between legitimate reasons for medical distrust in the United States and reactionary conspiratorial positions that are not rooted in reality at all.
Absolutely.
There's conflation between those two domains of positions, both by the people who harbor them and can't quite articulate their ideological understanding of COVID because they have some areas, things that are historically true events, and then things that are completely ahistorical, conceptualization of vaccines. They might have true understandings of like the funding that's involved in this and how that's corrupted and how these people don't care about their health, but also at the same time might think that they're being microchipped with the vaccine.
Yeah.
Like it's this mishmash of things that are rooted in reality and that are not rooted in reality.
The microchips, I think, is fun because you have to get like multiple shots. Like, how many microchips do they need to give you? Like, does the first one not track you well, so they need to like give you another one?
Yeah, it's not a great conspiracy theory.
And then the booster microchip like makes it so that the Russians can spy on you too, or what? Like, what is it?
And then there's also people on the other side in the population, and I don't like saying the other side, but the other political team, the liberals, the oftentimes academics outside of these fields or inside them, but, you know, don't care to interrogate the reasons why the population might be harboring these types of opinions.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're just bad.
But they conflate those positions too. You know, all people who are hesitant against the vaccine have these completely ahistorical, immaterial reasons for not wanting to get it. They're anti-science. They're crazy right-wing people. They're idiots. While completely obscuring the fact that within that mishmash of reasons why the vaccine hesitant population is the way that they are, completely obscuring legitimate reasons that consist in that rationale to not get the vaccine.
Yeah.
So why is it so awesome for the ruling class that this is happening? and that we have these little factions in the working class, and also even, not that I like this term, but the professional managerial class, the labor aristocracy, who are ideologically butting heads on this public health issue over which, other than themselves and you know, the, like I said, the nails, the people around them, the sort of scaffold effect that they do have, the ruling class is putting individual onus on people in a situation over which they have relatively limited control. A little more control in this situation, at least for themselves and the people around them and the people around them, but not control over the outcome.
Which is why I don't like, I particularly don't like Bill Gates coming in and deciding,
yeah,
the next variant, it's going to be so much less deadly that it's just going to turn into a seasonal thing. And it's like, okay, you know, I have a similar prediction, which it is that at some point, sometime, this is going to become less deadly and it might act a little bit more like a seasonal cold. But I'm a normal person walking around in the normal world and I'm not telling people that that's how it has to be. But Bill Gates, you have to understand, gave away all of his wealth about 10 years ago and is the fourth wealthiest person in the entire world right now. He's basically dictating to all of us that that's how it's going to be. He's creating reality, or at least creating the ingredients that we construct our realities out of.
Right.
At very least.
But in any case, you have this situation where large segments of the population are distrustful of the United States medical system, of United States science, and then, of course, conflating that with the industries that are supporting them.
Mm-hmm.
How beneficial is it when that happens to foster ideological controversy among factions of the working class to completely obscure any responsibility that the ruling class, the bourgeoisie, the people upstairs, whatever the fuck, the owners and officials have, and the poor response to this pandemic and getting rid of it in a way that is effective? That's awesome. They had mistrust that could have been directed at them. Now it's directed at the fucking liberals.
Or at the conservatives.
Yeah, or at the conservatives. It's directed at your neighbor instead of the state, the bourgeois ideology and the people harboring it and dictating what's happening. They don't have to deal with any of that. They don't have to respond in a way that is adept. They can just let you all, keep the barbarians fighting and blaming each other about the shitty COVID response. And we don't have to do anything, which, by the way, is a classic fucking Democratic administration move.
And let's not forget that during the course of the pandemic, wealth has been expropriated from the working class.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
At a rate that vastly outpaces that of pre-pandemic times. And then further, you have the bourgeoisie and the state enjoying the benefit of profiting and keeping the barbarians fighting. While over in China, they handle this whole thing completely differently. And if you exclude Hong Kong and Taiwan, there's two deaths in mainland China in the year 2021. Two deaths compared to our hundreds of thousands.
It is time for us to do what we have been doing, and that time is every day. Every day it is time for us to agree that there are things and tools that are available to us to slow this thing down.
She doesn't have to be held accountable for that statement.
No.
We're all fighting each other in this ideological superstructure while people are fucking dying.
It's your fault and people like you.
Yeah.
Not the fucking people running the goddamn country. It's not them. It's not the people who patented the vaccines and profit off of them instead of make them available to everyone. They withhold them from other countries thanks to the patent process.
Yeah.
So, like has been said, there are studies out that show us that Omicron is a less dangerous variant overall. However, it's much more contagious. And if it's half as dangerous, but you're infecting twice as much or even more people, you have the same number of hospitalizations, if not more.
Right. Like,
and it puts the same kind of strain on hospitals.
All right. In conclusion, capital benefits from this misplacement of blame. And it's just like everything else. And this is another way that it parallels to the consumption as activism paradigm, in that it is directing attention of a rightfully angry working class in the wrong place to avoid accountability for itself.
It takes people who are like, I think it's terrible how animals are treated, and tells them, well, all you got to do is buy vegan food. And then it doesn't do anything.
Right. And you got all these people yelling at people about buying vegan food one way or the other. And the meatpacking industry, the operating in the same exact way.
Yeah, it doesn't change.
You know, the chickens episode of BoJack Horseman? It's like that. That's such a good episode.
It is.
That episode actually stopped me from being vegetarian.
I'm glad. But the thing is, if you don't change the underlying mechanics, if you don't change the relationships of ownership of the means of production, the people who actually have the power in a society where modern conditions of production prevail, that's where power springs forward from, who owns the means to produce. If you don't change that, if you don't change who's making those decisions, if you don't change the nature of that relationship, you don't change anything. Because the market does not function on a supply and demand dynamic. Demand doesn't dictate supply. And people think it does. People think you can put a demand out to the world and the great invisible hand, the deity of neoliberalism, will rain down upon them in thy bounty through Adam Smith, our Lord. Amen. And that's it for PAX. Thanks again for watching or listening. I'm Peter. This is Miss Astronaut Cowboy Doctor. To help us out, click like, follow, subscribe, join our Discord, leave us 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. To support us, become a patron at patreon.com/packpod. That's PACDPOD. Thanks so much. Come back next week.